There were a lot of great films out last year, and one that might have passed you by was Deep Sea Challenge. This was the American director James Cameron's film, which documented his mission into the Mariana Trench, thought to be one of the deepest points in the world's ocean.
I mean, down to 27,000 feet, and one system goes, and then another system goes, and then another system goes. And pretty soon you realize you're in this kind of dead metal coffin, and if the weights don't come off, you're toast.
Okay. When James Cameron was in Sydney to promote the film, I caught up with him last year and asked him what was it like being 11,000 kilometres under the ocean?
Well, the initial reaction is, wow, we made it. When I say we, I'm down there by myself, but I'm the designated driver operating a vehicle that was built by a small hand-picked group of engineers, most of them from right here in Sydney. But then there's this kind of emotional, philosophical thing that starts to set in, you know, thinking about being down there, 7 miles down, as remote from human, from any human contact as you can be on planet Earth, I would say. Farther than the highest mountaintop or the most remote polar region. There's no other vehicle on the planet that can reach where I am, so there's no hope of rescue. But on the other hand, I have the privilege in that moment of bearing witness to things that no human being has ever seen, and that's really cool.
In the movie, you stated that it was important that someone bear witness to this, that it couldn't have been a robot. Mm. Why not?
Well, look, I like robotics, and we're getting great data back from the surface of Mars and so on, but I think it's important for a human being to be there and to bring back the story and tell what it emotionally was like. So the robots are really important, but human beings should go as well. And because if nothing else, the audience, if you will, or the greater population that can't go into these extreme places can participate vicariously through a human being better than they can through a robot. They're just more interested. And where there's interest, there's funding and there's respect for the science that's being done in parallel with these explorations. And it's much more important for inspiring young people. You know, I didn't coin this phrase, but no kid ever wanted to grow up to be a robot. They want to grow up to be an astronaut. They want to grow up to be a scuba diver or a deep ocean explorer, that sort of thing. So there's the aspirational quality of it. Now, chances are they won't, but that curiosity and that inspiration may translate into maybe a career in technology and engineering or in the sciences. Maybe they go into genomics or astrophysics or something else. You see what I mean? Where they don't really go, but their mind goes. And that's the important thing, I think, is to make science aspirational, that kids want to do it.
We've seen quite recently quite a lot of very, very rich often individuals going on these great big missions. You've got Elon Musk building a spaceport in Texas and Felix Baumgartner or Richard Branson trying to get into the belly of a volcano. And you fit definitely in that category of kind of the new adventurers. What is it? What is it about rich guys on big missions?
Well, I think I should point out, I think that there's a really strong distinction between Elon Musk, who took his life savings and committed it to the idea of making better cars that would solve our impending energy crisis with electric vehicles, and to putting human beings on the surface of Mars, which is his long-term goal. And he's built a business, a very viable business. It's not an adventure. It's not some crazy guy doing something. I mean, he's got 2,000 or 3,000 employees and $5 billion in NASA contracts or something like that. So he's making a real difference in the world, and my hat's off to that. The stunt guys, the guys that just do kind of big stunts to grab headlines and flash a big smile and be the jaunty adventurer, I'm not interested in that at all. I'm interested in furthering science. So I don't see myself in that same ilk as the kind of rich guy adventurers. But I think the private citizen, the concerned private citizen, is a model for science that actually jumps back to the sort of the 18th century, because you didn't have big government science programs in those days. You had individuals in the 17th and 18th century that were figuring things out, like the gas laws and which moons went around which planets. Those were all discovered by private citizens, not by big institutions and by governments at that time. So the governments are kind of, they've packed it up. They're walking away. They're not doing their job. They're not doing what we pay them to do. You know, we're supposed to be, we're paying the governments to get us to Mars, and they're not doing it. You know, we have this big multi-billion dollar NASA so-called space program that can't even get from the ground, can't even get its personnel from the ground to its own space station anymore. But Elon Musk, as a private entrepreneur, has stepped in to fill that role. So, you know, hats off to him and to responsible people who are leading the charge. And on the other hand, this is not about stunts.
Last year, James Cameron also released a TV documentary series about climate change, which was told a little bit like a Hollywood movie. I asked the American director how important it was that Hollywood started telling science stories.
Yeah, I think we're in a really critical period in history where we're seeing a divergence between popular culture and science that's unprecedented. People, I mean, we really could be facing a dark age here if this doesn't turn around, because the special interests have kind of hijacked the media perception of science, and people just aren't listening to the scientists anymore, you know, or they're only listening when they get something they want. I mean, they like plasma screens and Viagra. They don't like climate change because they're going to have to change how they do business. We're going to have to change, you know, how we live. And people don't want to hear that. So they're essentially cherry picking from science, taking the good stuff that they like, the gadgets and the improvements to life, but not listening, and therefore essentially discrediting the entire scientific method. But I maintain that the scientific method is the only avenue to truth. It's not superstition. It's not opinion. It's not political. It's peer-reviewed, empirical, and it's the way in which we find out how the natural world works and our impact upon it.
And just finally, we have a very enigmatic Australian politician called Clive Palmer. And 2 years ago, he claimed that he wanted to build a replica of the Titanic. And I was just thinking, as someone who is captured by this ship, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about this grand plan?
Well, I think, the Titanic has been superseded by luxury ships in the meantime that are much larger, much more spacious, and have much, it was unique in its time as the biggest and most luxurious vehicle in the world. Would people find it that way now? No, they'd find it small and quaint by present standards. But that would still be a very cool thing to do. I'd love to walk around on that. I think it'd be very cool. I don't know if people psychologically want to go for a cruise on the Titanic with that sense of doom hanging over their heads. That's a whole other question.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, all right. It was good talking to you. Great questions. Thanks.
American director and deep sea explorer James Cameron. And for those excited to buy their tickets to Titanic 2, you might have to wait on that. The Australian reported in the middle of last year that no official contracts have been signed with the shipbuilders just yet.